It's time for Ask Dr. Daria on RadioMD.com. Do you have a question? Tweet your questions to @ShareCareNow using hashtag ShareCareRadio or email your questions to AskDrDaria@RadioMD.com. Here's Dr. Daria.
Hi, Dr. Daria here. Do you have a health question? Every week I answer listeners' health questions, so let's just dive in with the first one. First one asked, are there any health dangers to spray on tans? You know, for one, absolutely far better to get a spray-on tan than a real sun-baked tan. The research is very, very clear, the dangers of not just tanning from the sun, but also from tanning beds and how that massively increases your risk of skin cancer. So even if, especially if you're getting it at a young age or in your teens. So that said, let's talk about the sunless tanning forms. So the FDA has approved these for application to your skin, but not around your eyes, mouth, or nose. So make sure you avoid these areas. Now, there's really not concrete research that it's harmful to put it on your skin. Some studies have shown that applying really high concentrations of the chemical in spray tanners could cause the production of free radicals, which can damage cells. But concentrations in general in the products that we're using are lower than those that are used in research. So it's just really important to be aware for anybody who may want to use them. The really most dangerous is to use as anything inhaled. So some research has shown that inhalation won't just cause irritation of our lungs, but could cause the chemicals to get into your bloodstream, and that could potentially promote cancer. So you want to be very, very sure you're not getting it into your mucous membranes that's around your eyes, your mouth, or that you're inhaling it. Most important point also is that don't forget your sunscreen. So most sunless tanners don't have sunscreen in them, and just because you look darker does not mean your skin is any better protected against that. So make sure you use a broad spectrum UVA, UVB sunscreen at all times. Try to stick to the shade when you can, even clothing covering up if you are going to be in the sun at the really hottest hours. Now, another listener has said, you know, when are your sinus problems so bad that you can benefit from sinus surgery? Now, I know a lot of people who have sinusitis very frequently, very chronic sinus problems, and they're miserable, especially around allergy season. So it may be something that you have considered or wanted to know about. Now, most people who don't have chronic sinus problems get sinusitis or a sinus infection that can come but goes away after a couple of weeks ago. However, some people develop chronic sinus problems, or what we call chronic sinusitis. Now, it's first recommended that you try medical treatment. That can include antibiotics in some cases if it is in fact a bacterial sinusitis, and most of them aren't. They start out as a viral infection. Steroids, which will decrease your body's immune system to it, response. You can even do steroid sprays and potentially some testing. If those aren't working, then there are a few indications for which you'd want to get surgery. Number one is chronic persistent sinus problems, if they're lasting over a month. And if you're having recurrent sinus infections, like four or more infections per year, frequent sinus headaches, airway blockage or obstruction, like that due to significant nasal septum deviations or hypertrophy of your adenoids, or other problems such as an abscess or even a sinus tumor if it's something that's very severe, you know, it's always important to exhaust your medical options first. So go see an ear, nose, and throat doctor. That's the very best. They're trained specifically to help you with your sinus problems. They will start you off with the medical treatments, see if they can really optimize your symptoms with that. And if not, then it can be important to discuss surgical options with them after you've exhausted that. Our next question is something that I get very frequently, and it says, when is it better to take acetaminophen, which the brand name is Tylenol, but the medication name is acetaminophen, and when is it better to take ibuprofen? Now, ibuprofen's brand name is Motrin, Advil. And it's very different. They're from two different classes of medications. Ibuprofen, such as Advil and Motrin, again, are NSAIDs, or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Now, these specifically block inflammation. So they, as a result, are great if you have inflammation like a muscle tear, a muscle strain, or arthritis. They do come with a downside, just like any medication, and that's that NSAIDs can irritate the lining of your stomach, they can potentially damage your kidneys, and they may increase your risk of bleeding. You know, also talk with your doctor before you're taking them if you are pregnant or breastfeeding. Acetaminophen, on the other hand, is Tylenol, and it's different. It's great for relieving all kinds of pain and fever, but isn't so great at reducing swelling or inflammation the same way that Motrin or ibuprofen does. That Like I said, every medication has the drawbacks, and for acetaminophen, that's that they could be harmful to your liver if you take too much. And is possible, I have seen people, if they took very, very high amounts, to overdose on them. Just like any medication, if you take far above what's recommended, it can be dangerous. That's no different for anything over-the-counter versus prescription. There's always that risk. So for me, if I have an injury or strain to muscle or bone, I'm probably going to be more likely to take ibuprofen. But if I have a headache or sinus pressure or fever from an illness such as the flu, I usually stick to acetaminophen. So I hope that helps. No matter what you take, remember, never take more than the amount advised on the box. Even though they're over-the-counter, these are strong medications and need to be taken as directed. Our next question, you know, maybe this is our second question about sun and tanning. So maybe everybody's getting their mentality set for the summer. This one was, is it better for covering up on a sunny day to use light or dark clothes? So clothes are rated by sun protection as UPF. And that means what fraction of the sun and sun's rays of UVA, UVA and UVB are getting through. So like a UPF of 20 means that 1/20th of the harmful rays will be allowed to pass through to affect your skin. Darker fabric is going to give you more protection. So that really light white t-shirt you may be wearing probably has a UPF of about 7 versus, you know, maybe if you grab that really dark denim shirt that you remember having from the 80s. I hope you still don't have that in your closet. But if you do, it has a UPF of about 1700. So it's going to essentially be virtual sunblock to you. So, you know, how to tell for anything in between? Hold it up to the sun and see if light comes through or if you can see through it. If you can, then it's likely that its UPF rate is lower. And, of course, you don't want to be hot. I doubt you're going to be taking your denim jacket out into the sun. So for best protection, choose a lightweight shirt that maybe is a darker color, will have a little bit more protection, and consider clothing that's treated with chemicals that have UV absorption if you're going to be out in the sun for long periods of time, because that's going to give you the best protection with the least weight, which is really what you want to have in the hot sun. Our next listener had asked about how to take care of a spider bite. And first, I want to kind of take a step back and say, was it really a spider bite? I have a lot of patients that come in and say they have something on their leg or their arm and they think it was a spider bite, but they never saw the spider. So if you did not see the spider, it's important to note. Many people confuse a skin infection, especially a MRSA skin infection, with a spider bite. And maybe it's even like a tick bite or other insect bite that they're confusing with the spider. So first, I always want to ask them, did you actually see a spider around or actually biting you? If you did, in fact, see the spider bite, then there's a couple of steps I want you to take. I want you to first wash the area with soap and water because you just want to get the bacteria off of it. You can use things like a cold pack, like ice or frozen vegetables or even a gel pack if you're fancy. And you can put that on every 1 to 2 hours for about 15 minutes at a time. Put a towel underneath it so you're not, you know, burning and stinging your skin as well, but you're really getting that cold temperature to the area. Now, if you develop redness, swelling, pus, or any flu-like symptoms, sweating, severe muscle pain or severe abdominal pain, or areas of skin that turn black, then I want you to seek medical care. That would be important to do. And go just talk with your doctor or urgent care. Another question is, somebody said, how often do I need a tetanus shot? Now, this is really important because a lot of people let their tetanus shots lapse and they don't remember. So adults should have a tetanus booster every 10 years. Now, if you've had a bad injury, a bad cut, or a wound, and then if you haven't had one in 5 years, your doctor will advise you to get one of them. So when I have patients that come into the ER and say their last tetanus shot was 7 years ago, but they had this really bad cut on their leg or arm, I'm going to give them a tetanus shot. If you don't remember when your tetanus shot was as well, also going to give you a booster. There's really no harm to doing that. And there's a secondary benefit. I know a lot of people I've spoken about it have heard about the pertussis outbreaks we've been having because the pertussis immunization wears off over time. Now, pertussis comes along with that tetanus shot. So it's really good to get it every 10 years because you're not just getting protected against tetanus, but you're getting protected against pertussis as well, which also wears off. So that's the additional benefit of that tetanus vaccine. And that's all we have time for today. I'll be back next week to answer more of your questions. In the meantime, I want you to feel free to tweet your health questions to our Twitter handle at ShareCareNow using the hashtag ShareCareRadio. We can answer your questions on the air. You can also follow me personally on Twitter for breaking health news at my handle at Dr. Daria, or check out my Facebook page, Dr. Daria Long Gillespie. This is Dr. Daria, and you're listening to ShareCare Radio on Radio MD, where we help you be your healthiest you. Thanks for listening, and stay well.